Let's sing and swing.
Evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila.
Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines. Episode 17, We're in the Money. Previously on Forbidden Diary.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Crowther, Nida had surgery this afternoon for her appendix.
The rain has been coming down in torrents for days.
The principal intramural pleasure in camp is giving or being invited to parties.
As personal food supplies diminish, people are making and selling souvenirs to buy food from the camp store and elsewhere.
And now, Episode 17.
The 4th of July, 1943. Camp Holmes celebrated the 4th with a handicraft exhibit, which combined county fair, arts and crafts, shop and garden, and artistry. The kids were so excited about it.
Are you coming, Dad?
Oh, Beady, it's going to be going all day long.
But all the good stuff will be gone.
Go with your mother and sister. I'm going to take a little cat nap and catch up with you later.
June, want to go see the farm stuff?
No, I'm going to go see the crafts first.
But you're
going to
miss the animals.
I'll just meet you there later.
You have to see all this stuff.
It's just a bunch of junk they are trying to sell.
No, there are some pretty good things. I saw a doll my daughter would like. Come on. What else have you got to do?
Okay, I'll go.
Yep, we raised this handsome, award-winning rooster ourselves, Beady.
He sure is a beaut, Mr. O'Dowd.
Yeah, and he's one of our own. Came from a hen right here in camp.
What's his name?
Why did they tie blue ribbons around that rooster's leg?
I don't know.
There you are, Beady. June and I thought we'd find you at the farm exhibits. Did you help grow these pumpkins?
No.
Look, Beady, your name is on one of the pictures.
Really? Where is it?
Over on that wall.
Oh, it's precious.
Mom, it's just a crayon picture of a flower.
Is it a hibiscus?
Yeah.
It's really good.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you make these children's books, Betty?
Oh, heavens no. Daphne did. She's a professional illustrator.
Well, I can certainly believe that.
Did you see the bedspread embroidered with all the names of the babies born here?
It's just darling.
Look at this egg cup, Hazel. It's as thin as china.
How do you think they made it out of wood?
Is that really wood?
What is this?
誰かが作った六分儀みたいだな. It looks like a sextant someone made.
What's that?
You don't know what a sextant is?
So what if I don't?
It's a navigation tool for sailing.
Why does anyone want that in here?
Because they are going to steal a boat and sail back to San Francisco.
You know, Kikuchi, you're a real wise guy.
I'll trade you this sweater I knit for the homemade lipstick.
Deal.
What's in it anyway?
Beeswax and dye.
Well, I'll be. I think maybe one of the guards might buy Sylvia's pastel. There were a bunch of them hovering around it.
They really went for the Japanese dolls, too.
Think they have any money?
They're probably more broke than we are.
And all they have is that Mickey Mouse Japanese money.
Money's money, isn't it?
No, those so-called Philippines pesos printed by the Japanese aren't real pesos.
That's what everyone's saying about occupation money. But I don't get why.
It's not hard currency.
What's that mean?
It's not insured, so if anything happens, it's all monopoly money.
Arthur says they'll be using it for toilet paper.
Gee, well, I guess that means it's better to buy all you can with it before it's worth nothing.
You got it.
Well, that's one theory for you.
There you are, Rip Van Winkle. So glad you could join me.
Man, this fair is really something.
I know. It's packed.
Did you notice Dr. Skrull and the other security guards milling around? I guess our new internee police force appointed them to keep people from snitching stuff.
We shouldn't need security guards at all.
Well, look at it this way. At least it's our guys and not the Japanese.
Dad, come see the totem pole.
Jim Thompson made it. It's a real hoot.
Come on, Dad.
Camp Holmes Daily News. Today's handicraft exhibit was attended by a capacity crowd dressed in their Sunday best, most of them anyway, who stood patiently in line to enter. Bereft of worldly goods, faced by both scarcity and high prices of all necessities, and lack of money to buy them, internees proved that worn adage, necessity is the mother of invention. Ranging from boondoggling to chemical lab, it combined county fair and the early development room of patent office with a totem artifact that Jim Thompson described as a very rare totem pole found in ruins of Camp Holmes, date about AD 1943, believed to have been used by prehistoric totem cult. Top figure is thought to represent the lamentations of the cult for their square-headedness for getting in such a mess. The central figure symbolizing their national sickness, pig-headedness. The bottom figure represents the ultimate condition of these people, the rice belly.
July 7, 1943. There's word around camp about five different American landings in the Solomons and fighting in the mountains of Dutch New Guinea. The Manila paper reports that because the Japanese markets have ceased to make a profit, their function now is to distribute commodities. As a result, Japan's financial relations with Manila will be closer. Our economy here in camp has changed as well. For some reason, people are flush with money. I received another 10 pesos from Nita, but there's less to spend it on because imports are limited and manufacturing in the Philippines is down to a dribble. July 8, 1943. I wrote a note and sent it off to Nita, but was aching to say more to her. Dear Nita, the adobo chicken and everything you sent this week was perfect. Many thanks. Please don't send any rubbers or boots, as we have wooden shoes made at the shop from logs. These are fine
in rain and mud, and they like them. Only get well, for we want you to be better every day. It is all we need. Our love, especially from June and BD.
Kita mo, Nita. Everything is all right.
I don't like that they have to wear wooden shoes, Auntie.
They'll survive thanks to the food you give them.
Mrs. Crowther would do the same. And we're sending things that are theirs, like those spices we hid before the invasion.
But you sent fruits and vegetables, and they're so expensive now.
That's because nobody wants that Japanese occupation money. The cucumbers and corn came from our garden.
I hope you didn't pick them.
No, Ismael did.
You're still doing way too much.
Well, I can't sit around doing nothing.
But you must, my sobrinita.
I worry about Jun and Bidi, Auntie. Ismael says the cooks from camp homes aren't buying as much food from the market. So Crowters are going to have to buy food on their own. I think it's time to start giving them some of their money.
Is that safe?
I think so. Ismael's going to give 100 pesos to Mr. Halsema to give to the Crowters.
Mayor Halsema?
Yes, he's living in town. We know the Crowters trust him.
He was a good mayor. Oh, did you hear? Those Japanese are building huts all over Baguio. They're called anti-something.
That doesn't sound good.
No. They're going to put soldiers with machine guns in them so they can shoot down planes.
Why would they want to shoot down their own planes?
I guess the Germans aren't doing so good. So they think the Americans are going after Japan next.
July 9, 1943. While I was in the cookhouse, Carl came around the corner and handed over an envelope addressed to me from Mr. Halsema, containing 10 peso bills and a receipt marked Nita under his name. Jerry was floored, for all his anxiety is relieved. Last week, we were so far down, trying to raise funds by selling our powdered milk to buy an egg now and then. This week, we are almost wealthy. Eggs have become a necessity for BD. He hasn't gained any weight since we've been interned and is still growing. We've gotten to the point where we have to restrict his activities, which is not easy because he wants to play in the camp pool. June and I find that we don't have such a gnawing hunger when we eat an egg. It must be a lack of protein that bothers us. Unfortunately, now that we have money, egg prices are sky high.
Camp Holmes Daily News. Rising food prices combined with a shortage of food items due to the advent of the rainy season have been responsible for a decrease of approximately 25% in daily caloric total of camp meals, according to our dietitian, Dr. Schaefer.
July 10, 1943. News was out at breakfast that the camp is receiving 7,000 pesos from the Red Cross. And all day, everyone was talking over ideas of distribution. There is one problem, however. There is nothing to buy. The camp store has no eggs. There's no grease to fry rice or onions, except at absurdly inflated prices. Everything soaring, sugar, fat, soap, if one can get them. A fall in Japanese currency values is the reason. The tide has swung, and now American dollars bring high value, as the Japanese occupation money goes down and down. July 12, 1943. We had another visit from the Japanese muckety-mucks, but this time they brought Japanese nurses who were given a tour of our kitchen. The nurses were fascinated watching the kitchen workers moving about in the steam, pulling kettle covers from giant cauldrons, hoisting huge ladles, stirring, shoving, grinding and mixing, lifting big stacks of dishes and kettles, and joking around. Alex served our Japanese visitors a Spartan meal, but it disappeared quickly.
What are these nurses doing here? You know I hate strangers in my kitchen, Arthur.
Well, you don't have a choice, Alex. And this time you're going to have to try being nice to them, okay?
I am nice, B.
Then smile.
I am smiling.
This all the food you're giving them?
I got leave food for us, Arto.
Well, Lieutenant Kira told their honcho we're short on food, so he agreed to let the men eat first and give the women what's left over.
Эти ублюдки прям настоящие джентльмены. Wait, where is Miss McKim?
Lieutenant Kira's taken over as camp interpreter, so anytime we have officer visits, he's it.
How we get information about Japanese?
We won't. That's the point.
Отлично. И как я узнаю, что происходит на рынке и с охраной? No. Hank. What you doing?
Aren't we using the banana dispenser?
No, put on tray, let them fight. Hey, Larry, put lid on cauldron and get these girls out of here. 2 года с этими идиотами, и мне по-прежнему приходится всему...
Ladies, why don't we go into the dining room?
This is excellent food, Mr. Hayakawa.
Banana を食べたことある? Did you try the bananas?
What are those?
Haven't you have ever heard of a banana?
No.
Here. See if you like them.
Thank you.
No, don't eat the skin.
Oh.
Like this, see? And heat it with your hands. Go on, try it.
It's delicious.
I guess they are, if you don't have eaten every day.
Mr. Hayakawa? Can your prisoners leave this camp?
Yes, with the guards.
But I thought... I mean, in other camps, they...
July 14, 1943. By the new standards, we are rich. Very rich. Today is the third time Nita sent 100 pesos. Her family and my grandfather's legacy by check on the bank at home are keeping us going during inflation and concentration. What a bunch of spendthrifts many of us have become. People are practically humming, "We're in the money," around camp. And I am fast becoming sick to death of hearing these two axioms.
Well, you're a fool if you don't take everything you can get away with.
Everyone does it. I might as well get my share. Why shouldn't I?
Both sayings show symptoms of lowered mental and moral tone induced by war and looting. And I will take no part. It is a tough time to live through and stand firm. One is looked upon as a fool and a sap, but I don't care what small minds think. July 16, 1943. June's commencement ceremony took place today. Earlier, as we were looking for a dress for her to wear, it suddenly dawned on me that this was a big milestone for June.
I'm going into high school, Mummy, so I need a dress that makes me look older.
Well, you've grown out of most of your clothes, so you don't have much to choose from.
Is there anything in our suitcase?
Well, let's get it down and see. Oh, I know. What about my white challis dress with the gold leather buttons and belt? It's in here somewhere. Oh, here it is. Gee, it's got 18 months of wrinkles we'll have to iron.
You think it will fit?
Try it on, and we'll find out.
Okay.
What are you two up to?
June's trying on one of my dresses for her commencement ceremony.
She's not graduating from high school, is she?
No. Carol, Kate, Evelyn, and June are getting certificates for starting high school, and June wants to look older.
Oh, I see.
It fits perfectly.
The style's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Sophisticated, but not too.
I love it.
I thought it might work. It just needs to be hemmed.
I can do that. I'll just go get a yardstick and some pins.
I sent word to Jerry, who was at the shop, that he must be sure to attend his daughter's graduation. He embarrassed June greatly by telling all the men that his daughter was graduating to high school, and was he proud. We wouldn't tell him what she was going to wear, and it was fun to see his wide grin and hear his exclamation at the graduation ceremony when she stepped onto the platform to receive her certificate. July 20, 1943. More typhoon wind and sheets of rain bringing mud, slosh, feet wet, and floors that won't dry. The camp news says that on July 18, there were 20.76 inches of rain. July 22, 1943. 6 days after June's commencement, Dr. Skirl called me to say that June has dysentery and must go to the hospital. I could have cried. Jerry was terribly upset and went off in the deluge to the hospital with a canvas pack of mattress and blankets on his shoulders. He'll sleep on slats tonight, and I'll be one less blanket and pillow. Oh, how I will miss Junie. We are all steadily running downhill from our diets. There are new cases of people with dysentery for the first time, and many repeats. I got soaked going to and from the hospital. Thankfully, June is very cheerful and takes care of little Susie, with whom she shares her bed, reads to, and loves devotedly with an older sister. While I was there, I took the opportunity to have tea with Carlotta, who lives at the hospital, in a little room, cozy and warm, with a double-decker bed and shelves for all of her belongings. A neat little hibachi made from an oil can and wire netting was heating water in a kettle when I arrived.
Natalie, come in. Here, let me grab your raincoat.
Oh, sorry I'm a little late. I fell on some muddy steps and had to go back and clean up all over again. What a lovely space you have here.
It's like my own little cocoon.
I like how you've decorated it. Very bohemian, Carlotta.
Have a seat.
Boy, this hospital's a whole different world from the barracks. It's lights out at 9 for us, and a long way to the bathroom, especially in this weather.
Oh, we don't worry about that. The toilets are right down the hall, and the lights are on for as long as we want. We're like a big, happy family here.
Well, we're a big, loud family at the barracks. God, you can hear banging from the kitchen downstairs all day long. The other day, poor Peg was trying to get a siesta when Anna kicked over her foot bath water. Someone's always making noise.
Well, you know, we have to keep things quiet and well-lit, because it's a hospital.
Swap you. My dorm's more like a circus tent.
Tea's ready.
Where'd you get the pot?
Isn't it darling? I bought it at the fair. Someone at the shop made it from a saxophone. This serving plate was made from the same instrument. Have some coffee cake.
Thank you.
It's leftover from a party. We seem to have one every night, and they're such fun. What a bunch of wiseacres those doctors are.
I'm very fond of Dr. Hall.
Oh, did you know he might be going to Manila?
Oh, no.
Oh, well, who knows, really? The Japanese changed their minds at the drop of a hat.
I noticed china plates and cups stacked on her shelves from the camp kitchen, snaked off for hospital staff use, like many other things. Although we had a gay and pleasant hour, I came home in a savage mood, thinking of June in the hospital and how she wouldn't be there if things were run right and dysentery were under control. July 29, 1943. Dr. Skirl suspects that Beattie's diarrhea may be caused by tropical sprue from folic acid deficiency. He wants blood tests tomorrow. This news cast us down a long way. If it's true, it'll cost us plenty in eggs and red beef, which is hard to get, and none too good. But Beattie's feeling important, glad to be noticed, and to get his share of eggs with June. It's rain. Will it ever stop? I have soaking feet from downpour and mops. Squish, squish in shoes. Slacks drenched, and it is so cold.
Camp Holmes Daily News. The storm has dropped 71 inches of water in 10 days.
August 1, 1943. To help celebrate Chef Alex's birthday, we had chop suey at second meal with bits of salted pork, and for dessert, ginger cake with frosting. It's been parties and more parties around here, so no one is hungry at the moment, despite poor, low-calorie meals from the camp kitchen. Inflation is in the air. It's spend, spend, spend. Buy all you can, for tomorrow, those Japanese occupation pesos won't be worth anything. Get rid of them. You will never need eggs more than now. It is against my New England constitution, but I have to begrudgingly admit, it's not a bad philosophy at the present. August 5, 1943. It is the first sun in 20 days. Everyone is washing and tired and cranky from cold, mold, and mud. I see Bill Moole out in the yard on crutches from polio with his wife and three children around him, happy to be together in the bleak sun. August 6, 1943. Jerry made a marvelous rice soup with curry, sausage, pork, onions, and peanut butter. For the moment, the great experiment is over. We no longer know what it is to feel hungry. The pangs are forgotten already in the orgy of cakes and parties. Everyone is anxious to loan, while borrowers spend recklessly on scarce and overpriced meat, eggs, flour, brown sugar balls, and shortening. Inflation is here, and triple prices are nothing. We shoot our wad mostly on eggs and cooking bananas for the children, trying to build them up on the limited things that they can eat and we can procure. The financial boom and associated loans have intensified the petty struggles in here. And it appears that the camp store is up to its neck in graft.
Well, you'd have to be blind not to see it.
See what?
Haven't you ever wondered why the camp store is always picked over? It's because when stuff comes in, a certain few go to the store at night and choose what they want. So we're left standing in line the next day.
Oh, doesn't surprise me in the least.
I guess our measly orders of two or three cans are unimportant compared to people buying case lots. Oh, it makes me fume.
Is this why the store's auditor resigned?
Well, he didn't give any reason why he resigned. So what do you think?
August 10, 1943. Now, stag parties are all the rage. Wives are throwing them for their husbands' birthdays. There are parties everywhere one looks. It's been nonstop for the past 10 days. Happy birthday, Scott.
Oh, thank you, Natalie. Wow. Oh, honey brittle. If you don't mind, I'll have some a little later. I'm stuffed with pie and coffee from the stag party my wife gave me. I just don't think I can eat any more.
Well then, many happy returns.
Oh, it's killing me, Joe. I've been smelling roast pork all day from the women's kitchen.
Think we can get away with crashing Arthur's party?
Why'd we want to hang out with a bunch of school teachers?
Because that's where the roast pig is going. They're buying votes with all these parties.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Camp elections are next week.
Are you going to Arthur Needed's party for the teachers tonight?
No. Is that what the roast pig's for?
I think so.
Well, it's been taking up the oven all day long.
August 11, 1943. I have heard of the expression, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, but I have never seen it concretely expressed before my eyes, and all on borrowed money. No one in here has earned for 2 years, and it is all Japanese currency at that. Jim Bozeman says anyone with integrity can borrow any amount in town without any interest, just the security of knowing they will get American money later. August 18, 1943. Beatty is back down from 76 to 74 pounds. I feel anxious about it. He gets double eggs and must start to gain. Ugh. I had to tell him to lay off his adored but strenuous swims until he starts to put on weight. August 19, 1943. After supper, Dr. Dean brought word that Dr. Hall and Dr. Lee and her children are leaving for Manila in 2 days. With all that she has to do before leaving, Dr. Lee made time to examine Beatty.
Well, his lungs and heart are okay, but he needs to eat every 2 hours and drink a lot more liquid. And I know it's hard to get them, Natalie, but he needs 2 eggs a day. And you, Mr. Beatty, no more swimming in that pool until you gain weight.
August 23rd, 1943. Dr. Schaffer came to say that Beatty's temperature was over 103. And he'd better go to the hospital. September 2nd, 1943. I had another funny dream. Beatty and Dr. Lee were trying to talk to me, but it sounded like a foreign language, and I kept saying, "It's no use. I can't understand. I can't get through." September 7, 1943. Well, with all of the parties going on, it was only fair that the teenage kids had one of their own in the vegetable room today. The girls were dressed in formals like gay butterflies, with hibiscus in their hair. There was much laughter, squealing and cheers. They had a good time, the poor kids. It's too bad the girls had to do all of the inviting. I wonder if women always take the initiative in wartime. Well, in the end, what a man really wants, he goes after, when his mind is made up. September 11, 1943. Dr. Viola asked for another specimen and confirmed that Beatty has dysentery. I was so discouraged. It felt like a void. September 14, 1943. Dr. Dean has been ordered to Los Baños, where he is to organize and maintain a medical service at the prison there. We said a rushed goodbye as Mr. Hayakawa drove him away in a brown Chevrolet this morning. Our heads spinning from the suddenness of it all. September 17, 1943. Colleen rushed into the barracks, panting, calling out two glorious words.
Italy surrendered! Italy surrendered!
What are you talking about, Colleen?
It's true! The guys heard it on the radio at the guardhouse! Italy surrendered!
Yay!
Guys, guys, listen up! Italy surrendered!
Are you trying to pull our leg again?
No, it's really true. I heard it on the radio over at the guardhouse. Italy surrendered! First Italy, then Germany in 6 months, and maybe Japan a year from now. What do you think about that, Mr. Hayakawa?
Then you won't be in town anymore.
Man, I'll be glad to get the hell out of here.
Don't you Americans like it in here?
No, Mr. Hayakawa.
Well, neither do we.
When the news broke, people listening at the guardhouse radio were silent. Just looked at each other. As word reached the barracks, a subdued, murmured excitement broke into cheers down the barracks like a storm wind. Everyone is buzzing, laughing, speculating, keyed up, and feeling almost free.
September 18, 1943. The wind is sending torrents of rain in a horizontal slant. It is a driving, cold tempest in typhoon cycle. This is the second wet season this year, with a third to start again in December. But next month will bring an end to the rains, and the promised great offensive in Burma against Japan we are hearing about. September 19, 1943. The Japanese High Command has ordered that the radio be taken away from the guardhouse. Apparently, they don't want us or the guards to hear news from Tokyo. From now on, it will only come from Manila and the Philippine Islands. The same is being done all over the islands because of American broadcasts telling Filipinos and Japanese soldiers they will be protected when the U.S. returns. A secret shortwave will probably be removed from service until things are safer. September 20, 1943. Jerry opened our last can of powdered milk for Beatty. It was thin and pale enough to be considered emergency. All of us had some. June and I each rated a glass, which was indescribably good. It gave the illusion of being all cream. Jerry had milk in his coffee, and Beatty in an eggnog. A simple glass of milk a day would clear up our health troubles. September 26, 1943. A guard came through our barracks with a gun and bayonet, swaying down the aisle, polite and genial, bowing, but obviously under the influence. People are still spending like drunken soldiers. I don't know how they can do it. There were 5 or 6 parties recently, one of about 50 guests for a husband's birthday. Mr. Hayakawa has been away, so a guard sat in a corner at Carl's party, watching the whole time. Our newly found wealth is nothing for the guards to celebrate. They flatten their noses against the windows, watching our parties, which to them must look as glittering and luxurious as Fifth Avenue windows to us. One soldier visited a party with a hopeless look on his face.
Hey, cheer up. It can't be all that bad. Millie, give this lad here a piece of cake.
Here you go, hon.
Arigato.
Are you missing your family? Is that it?
Yes. My wife expecting child number 4.
Well, congratulations.
All my money goes to her. If I am taken prisoner, my family will get no money at all. If I desert, they will get no money. If I kill myself before capture, my wife will be paid.
Oh, now, don't you worry. It's not going to come to that. If we win, we'll vouch for you, won't we, Ted?
Yeah, sure.
There's no way out for Japanese soldier but death. We must all die fighting. And if defeat comes, we all must die.
Then, son, what you need to do is drink heavily.
God, Ted, Where do you come up with this stuff?
That's what our sergeant used to tell us doughboys.
I hate this stupid war.
Join the crowd, Millie.
This concludes episode 17. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowder, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines.